Part 1. The Detective. Before we get into the juicy bits, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Ace, and I'm a freelance investigator, ever since. I come from Edinburgh, Scotland, though I was born in the States, Chicago, Illinois, to be exact. My past is complicated, and I will give you the full story at a later date. I am 28 years old, and I'm quite average by human standards. Tall, handsome, oddly cordial, but just as blunt when it comes to my business. There are some things about this world we live in that's beyond a normal person's understanding, and I know you have questions, so let me explain it in simple terms. You see, our world is not normal. Well, not by the standard definition, of course. Our normal is seeing the odd creature or humanoid animal every now and then. For example, my employer for this case, the Blackwood Village Chief of Police. Yeah, he's a bear. And no, I'm not talking about his body type. He is a legitimate bear. A grizzly, to be exact. Other examples are kobolds, birdfolk, tribals of gnolls, massive dragons that guard banks, serpents that live in the sea, and much, much more. It's like the Lord of the Rings inheritance cycle and Game of Thrones books came to life. Minus the Mad King, evil, fiery eyes, civil wars, and incest. It is the world we live in that makes it unique, and I love and hate it. About now, you're probably thinking, Ace, what the fuck? So here's my response before you assume that I smoked something too dank for humanity. I've warned you our normal is different from yours. So if the supposed absurdity is too much for you, the door is open. If not, grab yourself your favorite snack and drink and sit back. It is time I tell you about the case of the Blackwood Village Cannibal. September 16th, 2022. I woke up to the combined sound of my alarm clock going off and the annoying chime of my phone ringing around 8:30 a.m., which already tells me that this day was going to suck. After smacking my alarm to shut it the hell up, I swipe my phone and answer it before I miss it.
Freelancer Maverick.
The voice on the other end was rough and scratchy, like dragging sandpaper across a dry piece of wood.
Mr. Maverick, this is Chief Hawkins of the Blackwood Village Police Department. I was told about your particular set of skills by a friend of yours.
I groaned to myself upon hearing this. Of course that Aussie prick told him. Why wouldn't he? After inhaling a bit, I responded to Hawkins. Of course, yeah. What exactly do you need from me, Chief? The voice on the other end grunts, and the faint sound of shuffling was heard, probably files or papers, before he comes back with his response.
Your skills are needed on an unexplainable disappearance on the mountain. This is something that can't wait. I will see you down here soon. Got it?
Before I could respond, the receiver clicked, signifying that he hung up. I roll my eyes before popping a coffee pod into the Keurig on the counter in my apartment, humming an idle tune as I get into the shower to wash off the sleep from the night. Slipping on my shirt, I grunted as one of the edges caught on one of my lupine ears, to which I fixed with almost a bored huff. After fixing my clothes, I fill my daily styrofoam cup of coffee, sipping the scalding liquid as I go about gathering all of my things. After belting my Webley revolver to my hip and putting on my fur-insulated long coat, I step out of my apartment and towards my Jeep, one of my many gifts from my father. Climbing into the driver's seat, the journey from Moab, Utah to Blackwood Village, Colorado began. After putting on some tunes from my playlist, Embrace the Silence by Depeche Mode begins to play from the speakers. A smile appears on my face as I pull onto the freeway, humming to the tune. Right now, it is a calm drive that will be the only normal part of this, so I'm going to enjoy it before I begin my work. Part 2. Blackwood Village. After 3 hours of driving and listening to my playlist of varying music styles, I passed the Welcome to Blackwood Village sign. The village itself was quaint and decently sized, with all the normal buildings and outlets. Church, police station, fire department, some stores, and plenty of quaint houses dotted all around the area. Right away, I noticed that this village was diverse, not just by race, but species as well. There was a street vendor that looked to be a small lizard, possibly a kobold, selling fresh fruit. A crossing guard was a tall, fuzzy creature with a wedged-shaped head and long tail with a tuft on the end. I feel more at ease now, since the diversity makes me feel comfortable with my own difference. Pulling into the police department's parking lot, I was the third car in the lot. Maybe the rest are at this crime site. I mused to myself as I got out of the jeep, adjusting my coat and wide-brim hat as I approached the front door. Pushing them open, a lively receptionist chirps from the desk.
Oh, hello. What can I do for you, sugar?
Her voice was motherly and almost warm-sounding. I gave her a smile and responded politely and kind. Name's Ace. The chief asked to see me for an ongoing investigation. Her eyes, which were colored like pools of smoldering embers minus the hostile heat, light up with recognition as she croons.
Oh, yes. Let me tell him you've arrived, sugar.
She picked up the phone and tapped two buttons before speaking into it.
He's here, sir. Yes, it's him. All right, I'll send him to you.
She puts down the receiver and looks to me before purring.
He's waiting for you, sugar, down the hall and to the left.
I gave her a polite nod and smile before walking down to the designated door, knocking on it for a bit. A gruff voice grumbles from inside.
Come in.
As I enter, a burly grizzly bear stands and holds out his hand, paw, for a shake. After shaking it, he sits back down before speaking in his panzer tank mixed with gravel voice.
Sorry about the hang-up, Mr. Maverick. This disappearance is urgent and needs your expertise.
After picking up the file given to me and flipping through it, I stopped on the page of the victims. Then my blood runs cold in my veins. Two victims, one male and one female. Their names are Dragar Frost and Eric Wood. I brushed Dragar's picture and let loose a shaky exhale. When Chief Hawkins asked what was wrong, I looked at him, my emerald green eyes gleaming, and I told him in a shaky voice,
"It's Dre, my boyfriend."
My jeep rolls to a stop in front of a ravaged cabin, which was higher up on Black Mountain compared to the rest, and I can see that someone, or something, ravaged it. Stepping out and walking around the police trunk that was on scene already, two human officers approached him, waving in greeting. I gave them a nod and asked what the situation is, to which the shorter of the two responded in a smooth voice.
"It's a bloodbath in there, Wolfie. There's shell cases and a rifle in the living room. We called in a forensics expert from Boulder to see if the blood present belongs to our Vix or whatever attacked him."
I scanned over the porch while he spoke, one ear listening to him and the other listening to the sounds of the forests around us. Noting the sound of nature over the howling wind of the winter day, my gaze finally settles on them again, before asking. "No bodies at all. Nothing to signify that the Vix are present in the house." The taller officer grunts before responding in an oddly throaty voice.
"Nothing we could see for the time being. We don't wish to poke around the side before the proper people show up, so we can handle this property."
Satisfied with that answer, I walked back toward my jeep to retrieve my track kit. Opening the trunk, I moved aside one of my trunk floor panels to reveal three long cases, to which I take the middle one that has a wolf print stenciled on the top of it, and lay it upon the hood of the jeep. I return to the trunk and replace the panels to keep the other two cases hidden from prying eyes, and close the trunk door. Returning to the case, I unclip the locks and opened it, revealing a set of tools, a scanner, and a print resin kit. I picked up the scanner and walk around the property, scanning the ground to identify tracks that could belong to humanoids, humans, or supernatural beings. After it identifies wildlife like deer, birds, and the odd coyote and gray wolf, before it pings with a green light. After examining it, it was classified as a supernatural being, but its origins weren't catalogued yet on the scanner. Smiling a bit at this new challenge and opportunity, I track them to the edge of the forest, before one of the officers shouts from the front of the house. 5 words that both elevate my heart rate and chill my blood.
We have a live one.
Part 3. The one that got away. I sat behind the one-way mirror, watching as the chief spoke to the survivor. Eric's words, Dre's childhood companion. The poor girl looked disheveled and was extremely dirty, and her arms and face were marred with scratches and bruises. After the chief left the interrogation room, he poked his ursine head into the room. I sat in and grunted.
Your turn, though I don't think she's gonna talk. She hadn't said much since we got her here.
I nod and stand, coming into the room and sitting across from her. Even in her dirty state, she still looks oddly regal. Her red hair was matted with twigs and dirt, clothing torn and showing off her pale skin in places, and her eyes. Oh, her stormy gray eyes seemed millions of miles away. That is a stare I've seen plenty of times, and it broke my heart to see her like this. I walk to the water cooler and pour a cup of water, and I set it in front of her before I sit back down in my seat. After a minute of staring at it, she takes the cup in her bandaged-up hands and sips it gratefully. After she set it down, she looked up and made eye contact, to which I gave a reassuring smile to her before speaking slowly to her.
Hey, Aerie, everything will be okay. I just need you to walk me through what happened over the course of yours and Dre's stay there.
Eryx stared at me for a few seconds before lowering her gaze again. All was silent, save for the rain that pattered down on the roof of the station, before she spoke.
It happened so fast. Unsure of what I saw or what happened to Dre. I'm so sorry, Ace. I
gently smile again, though my heart beats a bit faster with each word. Dre was still out there, and if he wasn't dead, he could still be found. In an equally gentle voice, I responded. And that's okay, Harry, but I want you to try for me. Nothing can really surprise me anymore, honestly. So please, give it your best shot. Eryx looked back up and gulped down a bit before opening her mouth to speak, but closed it again. Tears slid down her filthy face before she spoke 2 words in Gaelic.
Demchen Coil.
After pressing her, she spoke the same 2 words, but in English, which translated to Forest Demon. With this newfound information, I scribbled those down in my notebook before asking her, "Do you know what it looked like?" When she realized I believed her, she leaned forward and shivered visibly, before saying in a soft voice,
"It was tall, thin, almost malnourished. It reeked of something awful, and had this hideous skull for a head."
At that, my scribbling paused, my eyes flickering up at her, before looking back down at the notes. After a short pause of contemplation, I scribbled a single word on the paper before circling it 3 times. Wendigo. A thunderclap tore me from my sleep in the apartment I was graciously gifted for the duration of my stay, and upon looking at the clock, it read 2:30 a.m. Groaning, and knowing I wouldn't be able to sleep after such a violent awakening, I rolled out of bed and went into the bathroom to splash water on my face to quicken the wakefulness. After splashing 3 handfuls of water in my face, I look at myself in the mirror. Already, small amounts of charcoal black fur started to grow along my arms and under my chin, which I idly scratch at. When I felt a sharp pain in my arm, I yelped and looked down at the culprit. 3 long scratches. Looking at my fingers, they looked sharper, the nails longer. Realizing what this was, I groaned again, before walking back into the dark living room. See,
Being a werewolf is not like how the movies or books describe it to be. The transformation does not occur all at once on the full moon. It progresses slowly, almost naturally with each changing of the moon's phases. There was only one issue with this night. Upon entering the living room, I heard a whistle from the dark. A whistle that made my hair stand up on end. A whistle that terrified me. A simple whistle that sounded calming but instilled fear. I yanked my Webley from its holster, which hung from my belt on a hook, and whirled around, bringing it to bear. From the dark, as the whistle faded from their lips, a well-dressed man stepped out. He wore a high-end suit and vest, a black jacket, dress shoes, and had his hair nicely done. The only thing that gave away his real look were the amber eyes and the sharp canines that were visible when he smiled. The man spread his arms open and speaks in the heavy English accent I had grown to loathe.
"What's wrong, Ace? Can't say hello to your dear old dad."
My grip on the pistol tightens upon hearing those words. His name is Ian Maverick, and he isn't my blood father. He is the werewolf that turned me. Like that should constitute as being a father over someone who really isn't yours. My response was laced with enough venom to kill a werewolf 3 times my size as I spat back. "First of all, you're not my real dad. Second of all, how the fuck did you find me?" When Ian saw that I wasn't wavering in my resolve or lowering the pistol, he sighed and dropped into the chair behind him, withdrawing and taking a drink from a flask before stuffing it away into his suit jacket. When he responded again, he had dropped the nice act and grunted gruffly.
"So, you're still playing the hero, boy? Why do you even bother?"
Sitting down across from him, keeping my gun held up the whole time, my response was short and sweet. "If not me, who else? I have better luck with mythical things and supernatural entities, and I don't crave chaos like you do." At this, Ian chuckled, as this was amusing to him. Naturally, I grew insulted and barked angrily at him. "What's funny, you pompous prick? I'm saving lives, and you're sitting back and watching. What the fuck else am I supposed to do after you took every chance of normalcy from me?" Now, I admit, maybe I shouldn't have gone off like I did. But come on, do you blame me? This man took my normal life from me, and I was going to make sure others do not suffer the same fate, if I can help it. Ian saw my frustration and crossed his arms. The smug look on his face evidenced that he succeeded in pissing me off before speaking again.
"So, this pup finally grew in his adult teeth. That's much better. But let me warn you, boy. One of these days, you'll stumble across something bigger than you. And it'll either humble you, beat your sorry ass down, or kill you. And you'll be helpless to fucking stop it. So before you go traipsing off into your likely death, ask yourself, am I ready? Because if you're not, say goodbye to your purpose on this mortal coil."
Ian stood up, and I rose with him, tensing my finger over the trigger guard, but not quite on the trigger itself. The older Lycan regarded me with a lazy, almost uninterested look before making his way to the door. As he opened it, he looked back a bit and said,
"Oh, and I'd watch you back here. Not everything here is as it seems."
And with that, he stepped out into the rain, and the door closed behind him. After I was sure he left, I fell back onto the couch and let out a long breath. The whistle still rang in my ears, and I covered them with my hands to try and block it out, letting tears roll down my face as I remembered that horrible night once again. Part 4. Breakthrough. After a sleepless night, especially after my father's visit, there was no way I could go back to sleep after that. I couldn't figure out how we got in without coming through the door, since I was living on the 2nd floor. After making myself 3 cups of coffee, no cream or sugar this time, I got dressed for the day, After seeing my Webley was indeed unloaded, I scowled at myself for being so careless. So I loaded it with a single speed loader of 45 ACP before snapping it closed and holstering it under my left armpit, opting to use my more discreet chest armpit holster in this case while wearing my coat, and to negate anyone trying to take it from my hip. After getting fully dressed and ensuring I had enough ammo for my pistol settling on three other speed loaders, my phone started ringing. After seeing it was Hawkins, I swiped to answer it. Before I could respond, his voice boomed through the speaker, sounding excited.
Maverick, we have a breakthrough. Get your tail down here ASAP.
After the click sounded on the other end, it took me a full 30 seconds to register what he said before I practically flew down the stairs of the apartment building and to my Jeep to get to the station in a timely fashion. After driving like a bat out of hell and quite riskily parking on the side of the station, I practically burst into the chief's office, panting from being out of breath. Hawkins was grinning from ear to ear, showing off his ursine teeth in his mouth, motioning for me to sit down before giving me a file to view. Already, I frowned looking at the file's face, where a golden and white eye rested on the cover. I cast my eyes up at the grizzly before exhaling deeply, asking in a semi-level voice that was laced with pants from my excitement.
Why did you talk to him? What did he ask of you to get this information?
Hawkins held up a hand to stop me before I went on and on about my Australian partner. The grizzly shakes his head before responding to my outburst with his panzer voice.
He didn't ask me anything. He said he owed you, and that you and him will talk when all this is over. As far as we're concerned, Maverick, we're not in danger.
After regarding him with a doubtful look, I opened the file and began to read. And right away, my heart dropped. Highlighted in yellow is the name Cassius Blackwood Myers. This was the son of Blackwood Village's founder, Isaac Blackwood, and he had been a figure in this community before his death in 1893. Blackwood Village was founded in 1830, one of the first highland villages in the state of Colorado, sitting snugly in the Rockies. I looked back up at Hawkins and said to him in a breathless voice,
"How? Cassius has been dead for a long time. There is no way in hell that this Wendigo is him."
Hawkins shrugs, helpless, as he did not know much about the supernatural or cryptids in general. After reading through the file in its entirety, which consisted of missing person posters, police filings, hospital reports, coroner reports, and, worst of all, gruesome crime scene pictures, I closed the file and looked at Hawkins. My eyes told him what I was thinking, and Hawkins shrugged his shoulders once again, his face saying, "Sorry, Mutt, but I have zero clue." Huffing audibly, I thank him and stand, taking the file with me as I leave the station, typing a furious text to someone in particular that I am not looking forward to seeing. Getting back into the Jeep, my phone chirps with a message. Four simple words. "See you soon, mate." Part 5. The Dealmaker. It was around 10 p.m. when he finally showed his face. I was eating a bowl of spicy red noodles when he clicked his tongue behind me. I gagged on the spicy food and nearly dropped the bowl. After coughing for what felt like an eternity and drinking three deep draughts of water, I glared angrily at my guest. Before me was a well-dressed human, only he was not human in the slightest. He wore a gold and white suit jacket with tinges of tarnished bronze in the lining. His vest underneath was a deep bronze, pure bronze instead of the tarnished variety that was present. His eyes were a blazing rose gold with reptilian pupils, and his smile showed off pearly white teeth. In his hands was a cane made of ebony wood and topped with a golden stallion head. He wore no hat or cape, and he exuded arrogance, but politely spoke in his adamantly smooth Aussie accent as he sat down at the table.
"Ace, buddy, hello. It's been a long time, hasn't it, mate?"
I continued to glare at him as I sat down before finally speaking to him.
"Shooketh, how many times have I told you not to sneak up on me?
I could have shot you, damn it.
Shooketh laughed as he leaned back in his chair, intertwining his fingers as he offered me another smile.
What can I say? I like it when they jump out of this skin. I do that a lot around Melvin, but I can't get away with that around most other wild servant circles.
Shooketh was a wild trickster, part of a gathering of near ancient humanoid beings that had a specific trait about them. Shooketh was known as the Dealmaker, as he uses his serpent tongue to entice mortals into making deals in exchange for something precious, normally their soul, but he has taken far, far worse. I sneer at him, showing off my slowly sharpening fangs before I hiss the next few words with distaste.
Why the hell are you stalling? You wanted to talk. Let's talk, damn it. I don't have all night, and you know that.
Shooketh clicks his tongue again and leans forward, his eyes brightening with pure glee, before he begins to speak just as excitedly.
Oh, yes, yes, let us begin, mate. You see, I decided to provide you with the information you need to give yourself an edge on this helpless investigation of yours. So, I wasn't going to offer that lazy bear a deal for the information you so desperately needed. So if you want the last piece of this puzzle, let us make a deal.
My own eyes seemed to show pure fury and betrayal. When we became partners, he promised not to make any deals involving me unless it was to aid on something dire. Yet his face showed sadistic pleasure, and that's when it dawned on me. This was no longer professional. He was jealous, and I voiced that, which, in retrospect, was not a good idea.
You must be joking. You must be fucking joking.
Shooketh continues, ignoring my words. If I provide you with the last piece, I want the girl, Arix. My eyes widen, horror crossing my face at the intent behind this deal. He was not about me, which I was relieved for, but Arix. No, I couldn't accept that.
No, fuck you. I won't do that. That poor girl has suffered enough.
Shooketh chuckled, and for a split second, I saw his face waver. A pony's head with a single eye in the center and a mouth of hundreds of sharp teeth before settling again back to a humanoid state. The sight made me shudder on the inside, but my face did not show a sign of discomfort outside of disgust for what he asked me. Shooketh's next words came smoothly and smugly.
We both know she's broken beyond belief. She'll never be the same again, and she will not, at all, want anything to do with you after she finds out what you are.
On the one hand, he was right, but on the other hand, she had been around me for a long time. Thinking quickly, I blurted out a desperate plea.
What if I offer you something more? Something just as important to me?
Shooketh pauses and smiles wider. When I knew I had his attention, I swallowed the lump in my throat and spoke.
You can have me. I know we agreed that you would not have my soul, but I'd rather you have me than Arix. What say you, you silver-tongued freak?
Shooketh took a minute to contemplate this, tapping his claw-like nails on the table. After 10 agonizing minutes, Shooketh smiled and speaks 4 words that sealed my fate. Potentially forever.
We have a deal.
Part 6. The Elf. 2 days had passed after Shooketh's visit, and laid out on the table of my apartment were the other 2 cases that I kept under the trunk boards of my Jeep. One had a phoenix on it, and the other had a gas mask stenciled on the lid. Opening the Phoenix one revealed a SA-58 battle rifle with a beautiful mahogany finish and 2 30-round magazines nestled in the foam lining. 2 boxes of .308 full metal jacket were also nestled snugly in there as well. Nodding approvingly, I removed it and lay it down on the chair next to me before removing that first foam lining, revealing another firearm under it. Under it was a Winchester 1897 trench sweeper shotgun. Its blue metal barrel glinted from the can lights above me. The similarly blued, sword-like bayonet glittered like a rich gem next to it. 3 boxes of 00 buckshot sat in it. Removing that and setting it aside also, I removed the now empty case and set it aside on the couch before opening the last case, which held an armored vest which I had borrowed from the SWAT team in Moab. A black vest with a white sun in the center. But upon looking at everything in the case, I realized that I had left my ammo sling and duty belt in the Jeep. After stepping outside, I spotted a half-elf male peeking in the back of my Jeep, which made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Hey, you! What the hell are you doing? Get the hell away from my Jeep!
My voice was loud and somewhat intimidating, which made the male practically jump out of his skin. I could have sworn I saw his soul leave through his mouth when he leapt up. When his feet hit the ground again, I had already cleared the distance to confront him properly, and I can tell he was mere seconds away from pissing himself. I glare down at him, my newly found fangs, which had just grown in as the full moon gets closer and closer, glittered in full view as I curl my lip in a snarl. The male whimpers pathetically, before squeaking out a just as pathetic response.
I'm sorry, don't eat me.
I scoffed at this response, lowering my lip as I then squint my eyes at him, mildly amused by his request, to which I responded with a half-amused, half-annoyed statement of my own.
Oh, calm yourself down, pointed ears. I don't need elves. They bother my stomach when I do.
The elf gulps, but started to walk away until I clapped my hand on his shoulder and lead him away from the Jeep, scolding him about looking through people's cars. After warning him that the next time I would consider eating him if I catch him again, he blurts out something that caught me off guard.
You're looking for Cassius, aren't you? Let me help, but please, I don't want us to stand by while they send a lone supernatural by themselves.
My eyes flick to him, burning into his very being when my response growls from my throat. First of all, do not call me that. My name is Ace. Second of all, I'm searching for him because he is someone held captive. My voice trails off as intrusive thoughts invade my mind. What ifs playing in my head? What if he's dead? What if he was forced to eat someone? What if? What if? What if? I fucking hate those two words. They make me both nervous and angry. But his interest in Cassius, I steeled myself and asked the million-dollar question.
Why the hell are you interested in Cassius? How the hell do you even know that name?
The male looked up at me and smiled meekly, responding in a more elevated, calm voice.
I have a knack of eavesdropping, and seeing how you're an outsider, I was curious as to why you were talking to Chief Hawkins, so I listened in.
I was stunned, but also impressed. He must have been extremely quiet to have snuck up by the office window to even have caught an iota of information about this investigation. But that means he may know about Dre. After contemplating my options, I pulled him into my room and sat him down in a chair and demanded that he talk, spill everything he heard, and how many times he had eavesdropped on me and Hawkins. He guiltily admitted that he had been eavesdropping ever since I had arrived, which even compounded my admiration for his stealth. After he finished his admittance and telling me his name, Kyle Laws, it was Kyle's turn to ask me a question.
Who's Dragar? And what does he mean to you for this to require this much firepower?
He motioned to the guns on the table by the kitchenette, cocking an eyebrow at me. Knowing he knew enough about this case, lying was not an option. With a sigh, I gave him the answer he wanted. He is everything to me. Everything. Looking at him, I mentally decided to finally let the memories return to me. One of the last ones I had before this nightmare started. Before my sun and stars went missing. Part 7. The Wolf and the Hunter. 1 month earlier. My alarm rang out from my phone, signaling that it was 8 a.m., and the smell of breakfast wafting from the kitchen helped rouse me from my sleep. Rolling out of bed, I shoved my feet into my slippers and slink out of the bedroom and approaching the kitchen, beholding someone that changed my life for the better after everything I had gone through. Dragar Frost, a human, stood with his back to me, working a pan of scrambled eggs as he hummed to himself. A smile spread across my face as I crossed the room, wrapping my arms around his waist, resting my chin on his left shoulder. His humming pauses as he smiles, rubbing his cheek against mine before cooing to me. Well, good morning, Sleeping Beauty. You slept through 3 alarms. Let me guess, the food woke you up. I couldn't help but chuckle, a hearty chuckle that was deep in my throat and chest. My response was a groggy one, but easily understandable. When doesn't it? You always make the best food I have had in a long time. Dragar chuckled and returned working on the eggs, setting them aside as he faced me, wrapping his arms around my neck. Dragar was handsome for a human, being light-skinned, 6 feet and 2 inches, long brown hair, a nicely trimmed beard, and handsome hazel eyes that always succeeded to make me smile, even after a long day at work. We stare into one another's eyes for around 3 minutes before he gives me a quick peck on the lips, after which he goes back to cooking breakfast. I grab my coffee mug and begin to make my morning brew, which is black coffee with cream, sugar, and a splash of Bailey's, mixing it together before sitting at the table. Dre soon sets a plate in front of me, which had 3 over-easy eggs, 2 slabs of delicious-smelling maple ham, fried potatoes, and 2 slices of sourdough toast. I look up as he sits with a plate of scrambled eggs, hash browns, sausage, and a fruit bowl. Grinning, I tease him a little. So what's the occasion? You made me a feast. Dre smiles meekly before he motions to the calendar, which indicates that it was the new moon, which means I won't have energy for the days it would last. I smiled, happy that he remembered this, as it was something that was still difficult for me to adapt to. Dre smiles, and he scoops a forkful of eggs into his mouth, talking about how he was going to go hunt with a few of his hunting club friends before the colder weather sets in a few months, to which I nod approvingly. Dre worked as well, if you call having a pastime and part-time apprenticeship at a trade working. His main occupation was a butcher's apprentice, but he also hunted in his spare time, so I always got treated to delicious stews, steaks, and the like from his trips. Many other humans and creatures adore Arbond, aptly nicknamed Arbond, the Wolf and the Hunter. I liked it, personally, and Dre seems to as well. So it stuck. At first, after meeting Dre for the first time, I was worried that he would shun me for what I was, having him come from a village that had been infested with lycanthropes, that would steal people away at nights to eat or turn. But even after witnessing my transformation, he did not run, even as I had snarled at him, fangs bared. He had taken my lupine head in his hands and smiled, saying that he was not afraid anymore. This acceptance was a changing point for both of us, and from then on, we had been inseparable, even after I proposed to him at our favorite mountain trail. It had been a month since that day, and it has been the best choice of my life to date. I asked him when this outing would be, and he smiled, responding in his happy voice. 2 months from tomorrow. Eric and I are going to go up to my cabin next month. Vacation time, you know. I'd forgotten that he had this trip planned, so he had recently purchased a cabin somewhere in Colorado. Where, exactly, I didn't know, but that's because I genuinely forget about last night's session. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Well, better now than when the snow falls to the point that the highways are impassable, right? We both nod in agreement as we ate in silence before we got ready for our respective days. After kissing Dre goodbye, I left for my next job. Present day.
Hey, big guy, you all right?
Kyle's voice shook me from my staring trance. I had not realized that I had been staring off into space until then. I shake my head to clear my thoughts before looking at the half-elf, grunting an affirmative response. Kyle Laws, the stranger that I had caught peeping into my Jeep, stared back at me with a slight tinge of worry. When I did not respond with words, he cleared his throat before responding.
Hey, look, man. I may not have been in your shoes, but I can tell hopelessness from miles away. What are you afraid of, man?
His words didn't seem to faze me as he said them, but inside they sliced through my scarred, aching heart. He kept up the assault, asking again and again why a lichen was afraid, before it became too much. My response exploded from my mouth before I had time to stop myself.
I'm afraid that he's dead. I'm afraid that I can't save him. I'm afraid of losing someone else that I love. Is that what you want to hear? Huh?
Kyle did not waver, but he did slightly shudder as I screamed at him. Tears streamed hotly down my face, a mix of fear and anger spilling out in torrents as I pulled at my hair, biting my lip to the point it nearly pierced the flesh of my lower lip. Hands gently take my arms, and I nearly bit their owner. Kyle pulled them down, scolding me like a pup.
Hey, stop throwing a fucking tantrum. You know, I was afraid of you at first, but seeing you act like a child and blaming yourself for something you had zero control over, it's pathetic.
The wolf part of me wanted to slice his head from his shoulders, but the one that held my humanity I had left succeeded in fending that side of me off. Kyle wanted for me to calm down before leaning back, his voice leveled again.
All right, we have to plan this through.
I blinked at him, eyes facing him as he spoke.
Us? What do you mean, us?
Kyle smiles, tilting his head a little bit in amusement. Fucker seemed to enjoy my confusion, it seems.
Come on, man. Whatever the case, you're not gonna let this thing neuter you, are you? And besides, he needs someone who knows these words and what lurks in them. Well?
He does an exaggerated flourish and bow, which turns a snort from my throat.
We just need someone who knows a thing or two about plants, herbs, and medicine. Do you happen to know anyone?
His question catches me off guard. Do I? After racking my brain, a light bulb goes off in my brain, and my ungrown tail begins to flick.
Eric's.
She's a trained apothecary. Maybe she can help us.
Only issue is...
I trailed off, but Kyle picked up on it and finished my statement for me.
Hawkins has her at the station on watch. I know. You just let me handle that, okay?
I nodded a bit, more sure in my unlikely companion's ability. Who knows? Maybe Hawkins could help us. But I was unsure, and I voiced this as such to Kyle. What about the chief? That maybe he can help us, assuming we can convince him. I could not help but chuckle at this. Convince the chief to hunt a monster with us. Sure, what could go wrong?
It's worth a shot, I guess. Just gotta call him up and say we need to talk, is all.
Kyle seemed relieved that I conceded, though he still looked unsure himself on if that would work or not. After a minute or two of silence, I stood up from where I was and nodded to him. All right, let's go. I'll call him on the way there. Leave any weapons in the Jeep when you get there, since you're not licensed, and I know for a fact that the knife you carry is not sharp. Kyle seemed so puzzled by how I would know such a specific chunk of info, but did not pursue it as he too stood up, lacing his boots in preparation to leave. I made sure I had my phone and gun before we departed towards the station, silence before I dialed up the chief, letting him know that I would be there soon in regards to the case, and that I wanted Eric's presence to hear as well. Hawkins didn't object, and soon hung up. I relaxed, silently pleading to the Huntress that this would go well. After 15 minutes of silence, we pulled up to the lot and exited the Jeep. The air had grown chilly, as clouds dot the sky, blocking the sun every now and then. Storm's brewing, I said to myself, grimacing at the mere thought of my soon-to-be wet hide when the storm inevitably begins. My nose flares a bit, taking in the scent of imminent rain. The slam of my passenger side door alerts me, and I enter the driver's side as the Jeep rumbles to life. I look at Kyle, who nods to me, and we begin to drive towards the station.
So, what you're telling me, Wolfie, is that Cassius Myers is back from the dead after the town buried him 163 years ago.
Chief Hawkins raised an eyebrow on his ursine face, doubt etched on his face. Eryx sat next to Kyle, looking much better than the last time I saw her. I leaned against the far wall, giving Hawkins a half-shrug before I responded. And that's what our elf friend here says. Honestly, it's not entirely out of the picture. Eryx described a Wendigo, and the file has his name on it. He either is connected to this, or he's the cause of it. We won't know until we follow this up. Hawkins tilted his head before saying,
"Us,"
in an inquiring voice. I smiled widely before laying out the plan and the offers for the two to come with us. Hawkins politely declines after a slight bit of hesitation, but Eryx agrees without question. After that was done, we went our separate ways, Hawkins taking Eryx to her apartment. Kyle got a room next to mine after we returned to the motel and settled in for the night. Staring up at the ceiling, everything seems to fall into place. The location, the time, the target, and the end goal. After looking at my Webley, which sat on my nightstand, a murmur escapes my lips as the wind tears it away from my hearing. "I'm coming, Dre. Just hold on." As the words fade away, my eyes slowly flutter closed before the blessed veil of sleep takes me away. Part 8. Reckoning. As the storm lessens outside, I slip my boots onto my feet, noting how much tighter they felt. I knew that tonight would be the night that I got Dre back, as well as solving this mystery. Tying the last laces on my boot, I straightened up to affix the rest of my gear to my body, slipping the vest on over my head and snapping the duty belts to my waist, which held my pistol. After sliding extra magazines for the rifle and speed loaders for my pistol, I grabbed the SA-58 from the table I had laid it on the night before and rocking a magazine into it, slinging it over my back as I start for the door. Grabbing the Wyvernware hiking bag, I close and lock the door to the room before going to Kyle's door and knocking on it. After a 5-minute silence, the door opens, and I couldn't help but smile in approval. The half-elf had an outfit that reminded me of the Dungeons and Dragons sessions Dre had every now and then. Kyle was dressed in a leather tunic, most likely a reproduction from Etsy or something, with worn jeans, hiking boots, leather bracers that looked somewhat decently made, with a back quiver on his back with about a dozen or so arrows. In his hands was a nicely made bow, and a knife glitters from his hip. He wore no backpack, but he had a military-style poncho with the hood pulled up. The rest of it was over his left shoulder, and he returned my smile.
"Well, what are you looking at? Let's get going."
His enthusiasm was admirable, and I nodded to him as we walked down the stairs towards the jeep. We had one more stop, to pick up Eryx, and then it was off to the forests. As we piled in, I couldn't help but look at my phone, at the lock screen specifically. On it was Dre, mid-laugh, as he opened one of my many glitter bombs I used to rig in empty boxes disguised as packages. This made me smile, and reinforced my conviction of saving him, no matter what. Kyle and I rode in silence as we drove to the apartment Eryx sat in, my free hand caressing the grip and uncocked hammer of my pistol, comforted by its feeling. As the jeep rolled to a stop in the parking lot, myself and Kyle dismount, leaving our weapons, save for his knife and my pistol, in the car, as we strode towards the gate of the courtyard. I saw Eryx sitting down, waiting for us, with a decently large hiking bag in front of her. Her own knife hung from her belt, stark white bone and leather in a decorated leather sheath with runes I could not identify on it. When she saw us, she stood up and grabbed the bag and swung it over her shoulder, meeting us in the middle of the courtyard. Without even saying anything, the three of us returned to the jeep, packing away her things for the drive to the mountain, and hopefully an end to this. Neither of us spoke before Kyle broke the silence.
"So, what'll happen if we do find them, and Drake is, you know?"
I didn't answer right away. I was so hopeful that we could, at will, find him alive. I didn't consider the possibility that he was dead. I give him a look in the rearview mirror and say nothing. How could I? Kyle took my silence as my answer and nodded,
understanding my lack of response. Eryx traces her necklace, a hammer of Thor, and silently prays to herself. Kyle rubs a lucky arrowhead between his fingers, and I caress my Webley's hammer. As soon as the entrance to the footpath is seen, as well as the sheriff's off-roader, the three of us look at one another before we disembark, taking our weapons and bags as we do so. After Eryx removed my shotgun from the trunk, Kyle yelled out in surprise, which drew mine and hers attention. Out walked a very familiar face and body, wearing his wide-brimmed sheriff's hat and in his street clothes. I couldn't help but crack a smile as I saw Chief Hawkins, who crossed his arms with a defeated smile.
Seems you three are content with doing this, eh? Well, because I want us to make sure you come out alive, even if there will be an extra body or living person.
I nodded, motioning for Eryx to give the grizzly bear the trench gun and the bandolier of shells, which she gladly gave to him. Once he slung the bandolier over a mighty shoulder and pumping the shotgun to cycle a shell in the breech, the four of us set out into the dark abyss that was the Black Mountain Woods. It was around an hour after we delved into the dark. Hawkins' flashlight lighting the way as the canopy of leaves had cut off any ambient light that would have been present if it wasn't cloudy or threatening to rain. There was a slow, invasive smell that wafted from everywhere, one that I knew all too well. Iron. A sickly sweet smell that turned my belly. It was blood, and my heart began to beat faster as I realized this, quickening my pace. Kyle hurried after me, but slowed down as he saw the back of my shirt rip a bit, showing off a back of growing, shaggy black fur. But it wasn't bad, and I shook my head to clear it. Using my superior smell, we tracked the smell to a large, musky cave adorned with deep claw marks and old brown stains we knew to be dried blood. We trekked through the winding tunnels, tracking the smell the whole way. Myself and Hawkins lifted our guns as we walked, while Kyle withdrew his bow and notched an arrow. Eryx slowly withdrew her knife, holding it in a white-knuckled grip, as we slowed our near sprints into a slow, almost military speed. We cleared each corner, each room, each stretch, all while I repeated the same two words, over and over. I'm coming, I'm coming, I'm coming. After what felt like an eternity, we entered a giant cavern, the smell more potent here. Immediately, I frantically looked around for signs of him, my partner, and my heart dropped as I saw him, laying on a slab. Without thinking, I ran towards the slab, slinging my rifle over my shoulder as I ripped my knife and began sawing at the bindings that held him in place.
Trey, Trey, it's me. Open your eyes, please. Show me that you're okay, please. My son and stars.
My begging was akin to a puppy whimpering for its mother, as I shook him while repeating his name over and over again. Tears ran from my eyes before I buried my face into his chest and began to cry. The others were shouting, but I didn't hear anything. All I worried about was the one strapped to the cold slab. The booming sound of the shotgun ripped me from my grief. Hawkins pumping it to cycle a shell. A male human stood on the threshold of the room, his smile as cruel as his cold, ice-blue eyes tracked each face before it settled on the slab. His voice was smooth and reeked of iron and viscera.
Well, you must be his partner. He's been ranting and raving about how you'd get him and save him all of this hokey fairy tale shit. Frankly, it was very cute before it became annoying. So I gave him a tincture to shut him up.
Rage boiled up in my chest, and I stared down Cassius Myers. Unslinging my SA-58 from my shoulder and flicking the safety off and onto full auto. Hawkins raised the shotgun as well as Kyle raising his bow to train it on Cassius. Two words left my mouth as my finger tensed on the trigger. Kill him. Gunfire filled the cavern as myself and Hawkins began to fire. a snarl affixed to my face, showing off my sharpened fangs as my first 30-round magazine ran dry. At the same time, the 1897 also stopped firing, empty as well. Cassius smiles as blood oozes from the wounds that accumulated from the combined fire before his bloody sounding voice croaked out two words of his own.
My turn.
The sound of popping bones and splitting flesh filled the air, his robe falling away to reveal sallow skin, pulled tight against his bones to show off all of his ribs. Each point of the bones highlighted in sharp relief as the flesh tore away to reveal black fur, rancid, dead flesh, pale white bone, and blackened claws as long as machetes and curled like scythes. A beautifully terrifying rack of antlers punched through his human head before that too fell away to reveal a chipped and scratched deer skull. Black saliva dripped from the scimitar fangs that lined his jaws, and in the pits of his skull, two burning ice-blue fires burned within. After making a mix of coughing and laughing, he spoke in a grating, gravel-filled voice. He spoke again.
Now we can get this feast started properly.
Cassius charged, screeching in bloody glee as it closed the distance between us and him. Hawkins raised the shotgun to fire, only to be swatted aside by the beast. Kyle fires one, two, three arrows before he was forced to separate from Eric's, trying to evade the claws that nearly took off his head. Eric scrambled away, dropping her backpack to be lighter on her feet to evade it. I had barely rocked the second 30-rounder into my rifle and fired off two shots before it was knocked from my hands. Cassius hisses in glee.
Too slow.
Before kicking me in the chest, sending me flying into the wall near Dragar's slab. My head was ringing as I lifted it from the stone, seeing the ragtag group of species and people I barely started to call friends getting battered. My eyes then fell across Dre, and my rage boiled over. My own clothes ripped and fell away, my black fur growing in thick groves before it covered my body. My limbs grew, legs becoming more lupine, hands growing two sizes, nails growing and sharpening in wicked claws. My head elongated into a wolf's, two pointed ears flicking up on my head. Saliva dripping from my fangs as my upper lip curled into an angry, feral snarl. My amber eyes burning within my skull. My jaws part as I howl. The enclosed space practically sing from the sound, which caught Cassius's attention. The Wendigo turned and chuckled wetly.
Well, I'll be. You really are full of surprises, aren't you, boy? This will be more fun than with these three soon-to-be morsels.
He kicked Hawkins in the back before tossing Kyle, who he had in his offhand, to the side. Eryx ran to Kyle and knelt down, opening her bag that she dragged towards her to dress his wounds. My jaws part as I roar, charging towards Cassius, ramming my body into his as we begin a deadly grapple for our lives. My claws open his flesh as he sliced my hide into ribbons, before we leapt away and disengaged, circling one another as our blood drips from our wounds, pooling on the ground. Cassius drags his claws along the ground, making an ear-racking sound as he did so. My ears flick in annoyance at the sound, lip curling again in a warning, to which the Wendigo chuckled at. For the first time, words left my maw in a throaty growl.
I will kill you for whatever you did to him. If I find so much as a scratch on him when I'm through with you, I will make sure your rotten heart is sliced into millions of tiny fucking pieces.
Our deadly dance resumed, my gaze red from rage as I slash and bite. Though now the beast I faced down began to evade my swipes, his own blows connecting with my back, chest, belly, and legs. His open-palmed blows towards my chest knocked me onto my back,
groaning from the pain that slowly seeped through my body, before the cold, heavy weight settled on my lap. Cassius had straddled me, laughing through the black, phlegm-like saliva as he began to pound away at my face with his closed fists. Each blow made stars flash against my vision as he punched over and over again, darkness edging in the corners of my vision, before a gunshot ripped through Cassius's raised arm. His and my head snapped to the shooter, being Dragar, who held the Weppley in his shaking hands. Cassius hesitated, which earned him 3 more shots from the scared human, the shots staggering him off as the rounds struck his chest and skull. Seizing this opportunity, I thrust my arm out and into Cassius's chest, gripping the black heart within before ripping it out with all the force I could muster. Cassius screams weakly as he falls to his knees, mewling like a pathetic animal as I hold his beating heart in my clawed hand. Looking at him, I slowly crush the beating organ, black gore squirting out like a shaving cream-filled balloon. The mewling ceases immediately, and Cassius Blackwood Myers falls dead on the tones of the cave he called home. I stared down at the kill, exhilarated, before my vision blurs and the ground rushes up to meet me. Blackness taking me for a nice, blessed sleep. I woke up sometime later in a hospital, the EKG machine steadily chirping as it monitored my heart from the left side of my bed. My entire body was sore, aching as if I ran miles and lifted beyond what my limbs were rated for. But there was another feeling on my body, a familiar weight on my chest, and a second heartbeat that gently thumped against my right arm. Slowly, I lifted my head up to see a head of long black hair resting on my chest, as well as a gown-clad body that was barely hanging onto the side of the bed I was in. A smile touched my lips as I gently rest my hand on Dre's head, relief washing through my body. He was alive, as well as myself. Dre shifted in his sleep, and I decided not to wake him, even after Eryx and Kyle entered. After speaking to them, which confirms that I had passed out after my battle with Cassius, I was told that Hawkins wanted to employ me permanently as part of the village's resident detective. Not only that, Dre and Eryx were similarly offered jobs, though when I asked Kyle why he didn't get one, he simply responded.
He hadn't approached me yet, so I think he's going to wait for a bit to acclimate the 3 of you first before adding others into this.
Understanding the point, I simply nodded, idly caressing Dre's hair as I spoke and listened. My mind swam with what-ifs and what-abouts for the better part of the day, before I decided myself finally settling down and getting a more permanent job that didn't involve traveling all over the U.S. was a good move. I told Eryx to pass mine and Dre's acceptance onto Hawkins before the tow departed for the day, leaving my head down on the pillow again. I let my breath out slowly and evenly before a smile crossed my face. We finally had a home we can belong in. My eyes closed once again, and for once since starting this hunt, peaceful sleep takes me once again as the rain patters down outside. Epilogue.
You're certain that he will keep his end of the deal? You know how we feel about failure, dealmaker.
One of the many robed individuals, sitting upon thrones of varying materials, growled from the darkness of their hood. The other gathered members grumble and mutter to one another, as the richly dressed Shooketh bows himself before the one who spoke.
I assure you he will.
As much as his crassness and bullheadedness can say otherwise, his soul is mine. All I have to do is collect it my own volition. The council grumbled again before a female spoke with a gentle yet harsh tone.
Shooketh, you've been known to do everything at your own volition, to the displeasure of this very gathering. How can we trust you?
Shooketh smiles his perfectly white, many-toothed smile, before replying in a sweet, mocking voice.
Why, Ares, you offend me. I've always produced results, have I not?
Begrudgingly, the council agreed, before the regent who had spoken before growled.
Very well. Do not fail us again, or it will be your soul that will be reaped. Go before we change our minds. Shooketh bowed before disappearing in a flash of gold smoke, his laughter echoing off the walls before the brazier went out and the Council of Wildling Gods concluded.